WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's back to school week, and we're going to talk about censorship in the schools. This month, the group People for the American Way issued a report on attempts to censor books and curricular materials in the nation's public schools. The report concludes that there was more censorship during the 1991-92 school year than any other year in the past decade. There was a 50% increase from the previous year in incidents of attempted censorship. Protesters succeeded in having the challenged materials removed or restricted 41% of the time. My guest Joan Delfatour is the author of a new book about textbook censorship in America called What Johnny Shouldn't Read. She's a professor of English at the University of Delaware. Delfatour examines how special interest groups influence what American children are taught in school. I asked her about the most frequently challenged subjects.
Depends on whether you're asking about challenges from the far left or the far right. The far left is easier to answer because they tend to be more focused. They will challenge junk food, believe it or not. They will challenge depictions of women and depictions of various racial and minority groups. The far right will challenge vegetarianism. They will challenge their versions, or they will want their versions of depictions of women and depictions of minority groups. So at that level, you've got a tug of war between the two groups. The far right goes on to get into areas that the far left does not. For example, the far right will challenge environmentalism and anything else they feel promotes world unity and goes against the interests of big business. They will challenge pacifism, tolerance for diversity, and anything that suggests gradual development that might lead to a belief in biological evolution.
There have been challenges lately against New Age beliefs in textbooks. When did New Age stuff started entering censorship challenges?
That's actually part of a continuing pattern. Earlier challenges in the 1980s tended to go under the banner of secular humanism, which was defined narrowly as a belief that human beings take the place of God. That is, a secular humanist is one who puts a human being into the place of God. That's part of the basis for the far right's objection to environmentalism, because to say that humans ought to take action to save the whales or not to pollute the planet takes over God's role, and therefore that is secular humanism. Well, gradually, as that term became worn out, and as it became so broadly defined that it came to represent everything that these people didn't believe in, these far-right groups began to switch to using the term New Age, but the topics are very much the same. If you eliminated secular humanism or New Age as words and simply looked at what people are protesting against, there hasn't been a change. There's only been a change in the banner under which they do these things.
Why is the word New Age used?
Well, the New Age does provide a kind of blanket definition of things that the far right objects to. It has a kind of sense of the occult. It has some sense of witchcraft, of otherworldliness that is not associated with God. It has a flavor of pantheism. I should also mention there is a slight change in focus. Under secular humanism, a lot of the focus was on evolution and on tolerance for diversity. Under New Age, usually protests will begin talking about the occult, as if that is the main issue, but then they'll get into those other issues as well.
Tell us the story of how you became involved with censorship issues in the schools.
I was teaching a summer course for high school teachers. It was a graduate course in literature, and we were studying Romeo and Juliet. Two of the teachers in the class were not using the paperback version. They were using the anthologies that they teach from in high school. Well, partway through the discussion, these two teachers raised their hands and they said, "We do not understand what you're talking about." So I thought about that, because sometimes I don't understand what I'm talking about either. But in that case, what happened was that the anthologies were missing between 300 and 400 lines each.
So what sections were deleted of, was it Romeo and Juliet?
Yes. As you would expect, anything that suggested that Romeo and Juliet had a sexual relationship was deleted, which shortens the play considerably. And also things that had to do with religion. For example, there was a line by Romeo that says something about heretics being burned at the stake. And when I checked in other anthologies, that line is routinely removed. And I later found that the reason is because far-right groups object to associating religion with violence. So you can't refer to heretics being burned at the stake.
So did you find out who was behind having these lines deleted from Shakespeare?
Well, what I found was not the specific answer to that, but rather a movement in this country, both in the far right and the far left, to influence the content of textbooks by using both the textbook adoption process in large states and the federal court system.
Let's look at textbook challenges in the court system and how effective they've been. One of the exemplary cases that you look at in your book, What Johnny Shouldn't Read, is a case that took place in 1983 in Hawkins County, Tennessee. What was the offending material that was being challenged?
The series that was challenged is put out by Holt Reinhart Winston. It was called the Basic Reading Series. It was the 1983 edition of it. What happened there was that a rural school district in Hawkins County, Tennessee, had been using very traditional readers, the kind that older people would remember as similar to the Dick and Jane ones. Everybody lives in the suburbs, everybody's white, everybody's middle class, everybody goes to church on Sunday. There's no there's no multicultural element, there's no discussion of things like environmentalism and so on. And that's what the books in Hawkins County had been like. Well, in 1983, the Hawkins County School Board adopted the Holt Reinhart Winston Basic Reading Series, which has minority groups, it has people living in cities, it has some children who live with only one parent. It has the majority of stories are very traditional. People would recognize them as very similar to what would have been in earlier books. But there was this mixture. And a group of far-right parents in Hawkins County, Tennessee, objected very strongly to those books.
And what was the judge's ruling?
The judge's ruling in that case was, at the district court level, was in favor of the protesters. He said that they had sincere religious beliefs, and although those religious beliefs were very far from the mainstream of American culture, they had a right to those beliefs. And so he ruled that the school district had to allow those children to remain in the public schools, but excuse them from reading class, so they would be homeschooled only for reading. He also ruled that the school district had to pay the parents a total of over $50,000 to reimburse them for the cost of sending their children to private schools while the case was being litigated. That ruling was overturned on appeal. The federal appeals court ruled that all that happened in those books was that children were exposed to ideas that their parents disagreed with. And he said there is nothing in the First Amendment that guarantees that you will never hear ideas you disagree with. So you might say that the protesters lost.
Okay, so the protesters finally lost that. But you say you might say the protesters lost.
Right.
Because why are you saying they might have lost when in fact they lost?
They lost legally. They lost the case. If they send their children to the Hawkins County schools, they have to use the books that are in those schools. But in a larger sense, they didn't lose. The New York Times carried a full-page, two-column comparison between the 1983 edition of the Holt Reinhart Winston Basic Reading Series and the 1986 edition. And that comparison showed many changes made in the 1986 edition that were in keeping with what the protesters in that court case had wanted. The lawyers in that court case, which was still going on, the case ran from 1983 to 1987. So when the 86 Holt Reinhart Winston series came out, the case was still being litigated. The lawyers got an expert witness from Texas. His name is Mel Gabler. He's been active in the Texas textbook adoption process for many years. He would be on the same side as the protesters in Hawkins County. He would be in favor of traditional values and opposed to the new ideas in the textbooks. He testified that he had read all of the reading books that were proposed for use in Texas in 1986, not just the Holt Reinhart Winston, and that he was very pleased with all of them, that they were all much better, from his perspective, than the books had been in 1980. So it's hard to say that those protesters were on the losing side of the case if the books that were sold throughout the country reflected more their view than they had before.
So you think that there's a degree of self-censorship and economic pressure that results when textbooks are challenged, even if the challengers lose?
Yes. Actually, you can prove that in a couple of ways. For one thing, the textbook adoption process in Texas and California is very influential in determining what goes into the textbooks that are sold throughout the country. Publishers will try very hard to produce books that will sell in Texas and California. Those two states between them represent roughly 20%, one out of five textbook sales in the country. So it makes sense for the publishers to try to sell the books there. Well, because the publishers know that they have to get through the approval process in Texas and California, where textbooks are approved on a statewide level, not district by district, the publishers will try to anticipate problems that they might come up against. They will also make changes in the textbooks based on what Texas or California asked them to do. Because of the buying power in Texas and California, publishers will submit pre-publication copies to those two states. That is, they will let people in the state see the book at a point where the book could still be changed. The state of Texas every year puts out a document called Corrections and Changes Requested of Textbook Publishers, and they list all of the things that the publishers must change in the book as a condition of having it accepted in Texas. California is a little less direct. They have what they call social content standards that have to do with the depiction of minorities and women and with junk food. And if a book is out of conformity, they will ask the publisher to come up with a variation that they can use.
Certainly, if you're a textbook publisher, you'd like to have your books bought by these states. Mm-hmm. That's going to really help a lot with your sales. And if these states don't buy them, that's going to hurt you. Mm-hmm. What are some of the restrictions in the Texas guidelines? Are there restrictions?
Yes. There are restrictions in the Texas guidelines that essentially say the books should be patriotic, they should support authority. There is nothing in the Texas guidelines that explicitly talks about not having a variety or not having diversity. But the protesters in Texas, regardless of what the guidelines say, the protesters in Texas are very influential. Let me give you one example. There is a Texas guideline that says that books are supposed to show the free enterprise system in a positive light. Well, Mel and Norma Gabler, who are the leading protesters in Texas, argued that the New Deal could not be presented as an important event in American history or as having had any influence in relieving the Depression, because that would go against the free enterprise system. And the way they reasoned was the New Deal involved income taxes, it involved restrictions on big business, and therefore the Gablers saw the New Deal as anti-free enterprise. So they objected to the New Deal being presented in a favorable light, and they induced the Texas Board of Education to rewrite the paragraph describing the New Deal and to tell the publisher that unless they put the paragraph that the Texas Board of Ed had written rather than the original paragraph in the book would not be sold in Texas. The Gablers also objected to including the New Deal on a timeline of important events in American history. The publisher went along with what the Texas Board of Ed asked them to do. They removed their original paragraph and replaced it with the paragraph that had been written in Texas. And if you unfold that timeline, you'll find a gap between Hoover and Pearl Harbor where they whited out the New Deal, because otherwise they could not have sold the book in Texas. I was in Texas doing research, and I found in the records that this book had been changed by replacing the original paragraph with a paragraph Texas Board of Ed had written, and also taking the New Deal off the timeline. So when I got back to Delaware, I found a school that uses that book and went out and got a copy of it. And sure enough, when I opened it to that page, the paragraph that was in that book that was being used in Delaware was the paragraph that had been written by the Texas Board of Education, with, of course, no indication that that's how that interpretation of the New Deal got into the book. And when I unfolded the timeline, I found a gap between Hoover and Pearl Harbor where the New Deal had been whited out.
So a very conservative state's restrictions will affect the rest of the country.
And that is also true of a liberal state's preferences. The publishers will try to produce books that will sell in both Texas and California. And so they will make compromises between what the protesters in each state would want. I should say at this point, the protesters in Texas and California do not represent the whole state. People in Texas are embarrassed by the more extreme right protesters. This is not what Texas wants. This is a particular political group. And the same thing is true on the far left. There are many people who consider themselves liberals who are embarrassed by the extremist liberals who want textbook censorship.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Joan Delfatore. She's the author of the new book, What Johnny Shouldn't Read, Textbook Censorship in America. We'll talk more after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Joan Delfatore is my guest, the author of a new book about textbook censorship in America. I don't understand how publishers are dealing with these contradictory pressures on them. You know, on the one hand, from conservative states, the pressures to have women in traditional roles. Mm. From states that are more liberal, to have women in depicted as working people and as mothers. You know, and that's just one example. So, are some publishers dealing with some pressures and not others? Or are you finding this kind of bizarre mix of cultural points of view in the textbooks?
A bizarre mix is a good way of putting it. What happens is that no matter how intense the protesters are, they recognize they're not going to get everything they want. What they're trying to do is influence the books as far as they can. So the publishers will try to give a little to each side. Let me give you an example. The liberal side will say, let's have more material by African Americans. The conservative side will say, that's not important. It takes the place of things that are important. The far right side is also very uncomfortable with any depiction of anything that puts the United States in a negative light. So to talk about civil rights and then to talk about Jim Crow laws and all of the kinds of injustices that sparked the civil rights movement, to them is promoting communism by making people disrespectful of the United States. That's the basis on which these people will try to eliminate all African-American writers from literature anthologies on the grounds that all of them were communist, because these folks identify a communist as anyone who doesn't like the social or economic setup of this country the way it is, which does tend to eliminate most African-American writers. Well, publishers will put in African-American writers because they know that they cannot sell the books in the more liberal markets if they do not do that. But they will edit what they put in so that it does not contain the themes that are offensive to the far right. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, for instance, is in the public domain. The publishers will eliminate specific references to particular states and to particular acts of racism, with the result that if you read down the table of contents, Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech is there. But if you actually compare it with the original, it comes out sounding like a valediction address, a high school valedictorian address, because all of the anger has been taken out of it. I went down to Texas to listen to the textbook, to the public hearings for the textbook selection process. And they were adopting literature textbooks, and the far-right protesters got up and objected to every African-American writer in every literature textbook on the grounds that they were all communists. But the protesters kept saying, we're not racist. It's only because they're communists. That's why we object to them. When the publishers would point out that even if a particular African-American writer such as Langston Hughes was indeed a communist, the particular poetry that they had selected of Hughes's was absolutely innocuous. It did not carry any of that flavor. The protesters would say that's worse because you are deceiving the children into admiring Hughes without telling them the truth that he was a communist. Well, one protester, when she finished this argument, was about to leave the microphone, and then she came back and she referred to a full-page picture of Langston Hughes, and she said, and besides that, the children in Texas don't need to see that big black face looking out at them out of their textbook.
Wow.
And yet there's still the insistence this is not racism.
Did you go to any hearings in California?
Yes, I did.
What did you see there?
Interestingly, the hearings in California were dominated by far-right protesters, but I think the reason that happened is because the establishment in California, that is the institutionalized textbook selection process, already has embodied in it the viewpoints of the left group. For example, there is a law in the state of California, and it is a law, not an education regulation, that foods of low nutritive value may not be promoted through elementary and secondary school textbooks. So even though the education authorities say that all that was meant to do was prevent publishers from constantly saying things like 2 lollipops plus 3 lollipops and 4 cookies plus 5 cookies. In fact, the way it's interpreted causes publishers to change even classic literature to take out references to pies and cakes and hamburgers and that type of thing. The same thing happens with depictions of minority groups and women. The California social content guidelines require a variety of racial and ethnic groups, a variety of roles for women. That in itself, particular people may consider that's good or bad. But as far as the protesters are concerned, those values are already part of the California system. So it's primarily the far right that protests at the public hearings because they are the ones whose views are not being represented in the institutionalized rules.
What do you see when you look ahead into the 90s? What kind of issues do you think will come up that might be different than the ones that did in the 80s?
In the 1980s, far-right textbook protests tended to be under the heading of secular humanism. As the 1990s progressed, more and more protests are under the heading of New Age. The protest will say, this book teaches New Age philosophy. those protests tend to lead off with complaints about witchcraft and the occult, which had always been part of the picture. The Wizard of Oz has been one of the most challenged books in the country for years on the grounds that it not only has the occult in it, but the challenge is that it promotes Satan worship, because Glenda the Good Witch is looked up to as a good figure. So if, in fact, she's...
Hey, it's all a dream.
That's right. Well, that's worse. The other complaint is that it makes real life in Kansas look dull, because that's shown in black and white in the movie, and the fantasy world is shown in color, and that shows that fantasy is being preferred to reality, and it's encouraging children to take drugs. I'm not being funny. That's what the protesters will say.
Obviously, you consider textbook censorship a really major problem. Do you think there are any solutions?
I think the point we're at right now is trying to define the problem and trying to figure out how to solve it in a way that respects the religious rights of the individuals who are protesting on the far right, that respects the views of the people protesting from the far left, and at the same time does not allow those extremist views to dominate education to the extent that they do. I don't think that the solution, when we finally find one, is going to come out of any one institution. I don't think it's something education can solve alone. It already involves the federal courts. It already involves state legislation. It already involves constitutional issues. I think that what we have here is a problem in education that reflects a problem in the whole culture. This culture is becoming more and more pluralistic. People who were a very small minority 50 years ago are large enough now to be making themselves heard. People who 100 years ago would put up with or accept the idea that they were not going to be represented in textbooks now want to be represented. So the culture is changing. It's almost like in physics, the Big Bang sort of theory of an expanding universe. And I think what's happening in education is just one of many things happening in our culture where that increasing pluralism is causing unrest. I don't think you're going to solve the education problem, the textbook selection problem, without addressing the larger problem.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you. I enjoyed it very much.
Joan Delvatore is the author of What Johnny Shouldn't Read, Textbook Censorship in America. It's published by Yale University Press. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.